When you think about the last school year, do you feel like your child regressed or fell behind academically? In spite of the truly heroic efforts of teachers and parents, many people are viewing 2020 as the year of lost learning. But the loss wasn't just academic. In fact, the biggest hit may be in social, executive function, and peripheral learning, all of the things that students learn incidentally by being in a classroom and having to work with other students. Intentionally helping our children and teens build skills in these areas is going to be more important than ever before. And our guest, Sarah Ward, is just the person to give you guidance on how to do that. This is LD Expert Live. Welcome to LD Expert Live, your place for answers and solutions for learning differences, dyslexia, and attention challenges. I'm your host, Jill Stowell, founder of Stowell Learning Centers, and author of At Wit's End, A Parent's Guide to Ending the Struggle, Tears, and Turmoil of Learning Disabilities. This book will help you understand why some bright children and teens struggle in school and what can be done to change that permanently. To get a free copy, go to parents@witsend.com. Our guest today is Sarah Ward. Sarah is a certified speech-language pathologist and internationally recognized authority on executive function. She has consulted with over 1,600 schools on the programs and strategies she has developed with her co-founder, Kristen Jacobson. Their 360 Thinking Executive Function Program received the Innovative Promising Practices Award from the national organization, CHAD. Welcome, Sarah.
Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for the invitation. I'm so excited to be here today. You're so right. This is a hot topic with kids having been in remote learning and anticipating the transition back to school. So really excited Absolutely. To be here today.
Well, we are delighted to have you joining us today at Stowell Learning Centers. We're big fans of your work.
Thank you.
So this past year has certainly been one full of changes and transitions. What impact do you think this has had on students' executive function?
I think it's had a lot of impact, and not all doom and gloom. For some kids, it's actually been a bit of a positive impact. I think that students have had to be more and more independent with their learning. They've certainly had to be able to log on time, be able to manage breaks, get back. And some students, they learned to do that and did it quite well. On the other hand, it's had a bit of a negative impact. Really from a variety of reasons that I think are really interesting and also reflect what we do when we do this thing called executive function skills. And so just to share a couple ideas of what that is. So for example, while all of you are here and you're hanging out and you're listening to me, I pretty much guarantee you have this thought bubble or this movie going through your head where you're planning what's going to happen when you're done listening today. Or even while you're listening to me, you might think, okay, I need to run into the other room. I need to put the laundry into the dryer. I need to walk the dog. I've got to check a report this afternoon. Oh, and I should take hamburger out of the refrigerator to thaw because we're having burgers for dinner tonight. And as you run that movie through your head, it's what allows you to be what we call a beat ahead. It's what allows you to say, okay, the minute you stop this show, you're headed straight for the laundry room. And as soon as you leave the laundry room, you're going right to the freezer to take the hamburger out. Think about your own children when you say to a child, okay, it's time to get up this morning and we need to get ourselves dressed and go downstairs and make breakfast. Or if the child's eating breakfast and you say, go upstairs, you need to grab your homework off your desk and get your backpack and brush your teeth. You're expecting that student to be able to visualize going up the stairs into the bedroom, getting the homework off of the desk. Many students with weak executive skills, they don't do that visualization of the future. And that's why you might say, go upstairs, and the child gets upstairs and you pass them upstairs and find them on the floor playing with Legos or sitting on their bed reading a book. They may not carry out that future task. So back to the big picture of how it's impacted in school. One thing with the pandemic is when children are in school, they're really learning to do this forethought aspect of executive function skills. So when they're sitting at their desk and the teacher says, okay, class, you're going to need a whiteboard and your math manipulatives and a pencil, that child has to envision, I'm going to go over to that area and get my whiteboard. I'm going to go to the math zone and get my manipulatives, and I'm going to return back to my desk. In the pandemic, two things happened. One, if a student was at home, they didn't have to transition far away to gather materials. They were just sort of staying in one place by the computer. Those high schoolers didn't have to think about, okay, I've got to go down the hall and remember to bring my homework to turn into that class. They weren't necessarily practicing that. In the classroom, if students were not remote, it was the case with social and physical distancing. Teachers were bringing materials to the students. Students weren't getting up and transitioning to music class. The music teacher was coming to them. So the very forethought aspect of executive skills that children needed to be practicing, they might not have been practicing it. And so this is going to become a bit of a lagging skill. And that forethought is critical to being able to carry out tasks over space and time. So that's a big thing we want to make sure that we're working on.
And I want to talk a little bit more about that, because that is so critical. And as adults, we may not even think about the fact that as we plan, you know, we plan out our time or our day, we're most, you know, we're visualizing. We have that movie going on.
Yes.
So how can parents start building this skill in their children?
Such a great question. So the number one thing is that I love what you just said, that we as adults are often visualizing. So when you're a parent and you give a direction to a child, go upstairs, get your shin guards and your soccer ball and come downstairs for soccer practice, you're actually the one that's doing the visualizing, right? You're the one picturing the child going up the stairs into their bedroom, etc. And typically in that circumstance, you're going to have to give the direction 2, 3, 4 times. Go upstairs, don't forget your shin guards. And they may get the shin guards, come back downstairs, and you go, where's the soccer ball? And then they have to go back upstairs. We kind of call that the zigzag behavior. We want to reduce that. So there are several really cool strategies that you can do. One is that we do visualize over space and time. And that's very important to understand. So if you're in the kitchen, you visualize yourself in your bedroom, which is down the hall and up the stairs. If you're at your desk, you visualize yourself turning something in. It might be driving to school and walking in the building. So as a parent, here's a cool tool. Don't give your child the direction and say, go upstairs, brush your teeth, put on your pajamas, and pick out a book. Instead, stop your child at the bottom of the stairs and say, it's time for bed. When you go upstairs, what do you see yourself doing? And you can use a nifty phrase called point out your plan. Now, pointing out your plan is actually really critical, because we want that student to use their hand and gesture. Well, I'm going to go into the bathroom and brush my teeth. I need to go into my bedroom and get my pajamas and then pick out a book. One thing we know is that gesture really helps us to imagine how we're traveling through space and time. And it's something very specific. It's called representational co-thought gesture. So if you have finished the morning routine with your child and you're down the hall, instead of saying, go get breakfast, and you're thinking about that, stop the child at the end of the hall and say, it's time for breakfast. What's your plan in the kitchen? And you want that child to be able to say, well, I've got to go into the kitchen. I'm going to get Cheerios out of the pantry and milk and make myself a bowl of cereal. Now, if you're having a little bit of an eye roll moment and thinking, okay, I don't think I can get my kid to do that, it's okay, in the sense that what you want to really tell your child is, hey, you're working on organization. You're working on planning skills. And when people plan, they visualize what they're going to do and they imagine where they're going. So we're just practicing that imagination skill, and really tell them why they're doing it. So always have your child point out their plan. So if they've just finished breakfast and it's time to get out the door, say, okay, we're headed out the door. point out your plan to be ready to go. And again, you want that child to say, well, I need to go to the mudroom and get my backpack, and I need to put on my shoes, and I need to stop in the kitchen and grab my lunchbox. Have them point out their plan. Now, the second strategy is something that always really surprises people, because typically in the world of executive function, there's always this high recommendation to give the child a checklist. You know, give them a checklist of what it is that they need to do. But there's two sort of inherent tricky things about that that will make the checklist not necessarily always work, number one. And number two, it makes the child a little bit dependent upon the checklist and not learning and carrying over a skill. So the thing is, when you give your child a checklist of things to do, typically you as the parent envisioned the tasks and then gave a label to it and put it on the list. But the big thing that we know that I've been chatting about is that executive function always starts with that visualization and forethought. And that's something called nonverbal working memory. And I always laugh because as a speech pathologist, I feel as though I never am quite without my tools. So I always have like my favorite thought bubble. So the whole idea is that we want students to really be able to do that visualization of, oh, okay, well, what am I going to look like? And so if I see myself ready, what does ready for school actually entail? It means that I'm fully dressed. It means that I have a headband. It means that I have my lunchbox, my snack, whatever. I really have to see that in my mind's eye. If you give me a checklist, I may not be visualizing the gestalt of what I look like, but rather what I'm doing is I'm reading a list of words. So one of the best things that you can do is take a photograph of your child and print that photograph out and put it inside a plastic sleeve protector. So if you have a photograph, get your child fully dressed for school one morning, and especially when we're going back to school, this is the perfect time. You can get that back to school, third grade, fourth grade, eighth grade picture, whatever it is, and try to get a little bit of a side view so that the child can see the materials they need in their hands, their backpack, their coat on, their shoes tied, whatever it might be. And that way, one of the things that you can do, and again, it's a little bit of a magic phrase, you want to pull up that picture and say to your child, time for school, show and tell me your plan to match the picture. And that show word is very important because the show, again, encourages the student to actually show you with their body. Oh, well, if I have my backpack, then I need to go into the mudroom and get my backpack. If I see my lunch in the picture, I need to go into the kitchen and get my lunch. They tend to point out their plan. Now, the reason why we love to put this inside a plastic sleeve protector is that we actually want this photograph to be dynamic and not static. We don't want a photograph to hang on the wall. We don't want it to become wallpaper, because the fact of the matter is every day you have a routine decision that you need to make. And a routine decision is getting dressed. And you all do that very easily. You know that means you put on undergarments and a top and a bottom and shoes, and you may or may not have outerwear and accessories. On top of that routine, you make a complex decision. Now, the complex decision is, well, what is the weather like today? Or what future event am I going to? And how will that change what I'm going to wear? How will I look the same but different in that photograph? So if you have a photograph of a child who's wearing a short sleeve t-shirt and shorts and sneakers, and we say, this is what you look like, but today it's raining, how will you look the same but different? Same but different is one of the number one ways we develop cognitive flexibility in our students with executive function skills. Well, I would have a raincoat and I would be wearing my rain boots. I might say to a student, gee, today when you go to school, you have your physical education, your PE class. How do you need to look the same but different? Oh, I really have to remember to wear comfortable leggings and long socks. So I'll look the same but different. My closing point being that photographs allow for cognitive flexibility. They allow a student to see the gestalt and to really do that planning and to create that mental forethought, whereas the checklist just can't do that. And a photograph is more biologically enduring, as Jessica Minahan, who's an expert on anxiety, will tell you. It allows you to really hold on to information for a significantly longer period of time. So it's a cool tool.
Wow. That is just brilliant. And I encourage parents, you're going to maybe be listening to this and think, wow, I don't feel like I have time for that. We're so busy. We have to, you know, get to all the activities. I have to get everyone online, or I have to get them all to school. What you are building with these tools that Sarah just talked about, you are building memory and comprehension and their independence. This is what our executive function does all the time, all day. And by taking That's just right. that little bit of time to stop and have your child picture and talk through their plan, you're setting in motion all kinds of skills that they need for life and for school and learning. So that was just brilliant. I'm going to encourage everybody to go back and listen again and again and share it, because that tremendous stuff.
I was going to say two other great things of photographs. If your child has a backpack or an activity bag for swimming, field hockey, whatever it is, take everything out of the bag, lay out what goes grouped together. So you might have a pile of the binders, you might have the books, the academic agenda planner, and then take a photograph of it. In younger children, we print that photograph and we make a luggage tag out of it so that a child can just look at the luggage tag on the backpack and see what a packed backpack looks like. That's also really great for families, maybe from a divorced family where the child's going from home to home. Then that image is always there on the backpack. Another great thing, think about how many times we say to a child, oh, before you come upstairs, clean the living room, or don't leave the kitchen table a mess with your homework, or you need to clean your bedroom. If you really want the child to clean the bedroom, you're the one that has the image of what clean bedroom looks like. You're the one that has the image of what the living room looks like, or the clean bathroom. Take a photograph of it. Have the bathroom clean, get a photograph and say, hey, before you leave the bathroom, match the picture. This is what it looks like. And that makes it much easier for the student to glance and go, oh, it's not that big of a deal. I'm just taking those things off the, you know, the coffee room table, whatever it might be. Helps a lot.
It really does. That's a great tool. Great tool. So I want to talk about another piece. With online schooling, there was a real concern with the mental health implications of lack of connection and kids missing their friends. And in addition to this, and you kind of talked about this a little bit, there's a great deal of what we call peripheral or incidental learning that goes on in a classroom or on a playground that contributes to shaping behavior and social skills and decision-making. I would love for you to talk a little bit about what you've called situational awareness and how critical that is.
Absolutely. So one of my favorite things to share is that, and this I always think is a surprise to people, there is not a high correlation between IQ and executive function. In fact, oftentimes we find a student who's struggling with executive function challenges and we say, oh boy, let's send this child out and let's do some evaluation. And often, I would say it's the case more than not, the child comes back with average, if not significantly above average test scores, and sometimes doesn't even qualify for services. And sometimes my very, very bright students often have the worst executive skills. So even though there is not this strong correlation between IQ and executive function, there is a 100% correlation between SQ and executive function. And I always love to share that because so many times people will say, okay, I know what IQ is, I know what EQ is, but SQ, yep. SQ is situational intelligence. And situational intelligence is essentially our situational awareness, or what we just call the stop and read the room skill. And there are four features of situational awareness, which actually conveniently match the acronym STOP for stop and read the room. Those four features are space, time, objects, and people. So in any one given moment in time, we are always situationally aware of the space that we are in. Where am I? We're often always aware of what time is it? What time is it now? By what time do I need to transition? what pace do I need to keep in order to make that transition on time? We are aware of the objects that we have and need, and we are aware of people in two distinct ways. We're aware of others and we are aware of ourselves. So when we read the room, we're often looking around to see, well, what are other people doing? But we also need to be aware of our own actions. And we call that being aware of role, like what's my job right now? So again, in summary, in any one moment in time, we are aware of where am I, what time is it, what objects do I need, and what's my job right now? Now, not only do we do that in the moment, but we also do that significantly when we transition. So if I'm a student and I'm walking down the hall and I transition through the doorway into my classroom, I need to be able to scan that space and stop and read the room. Okay, space, I'm in my classroom. What's happening in this moment in time? Oh, kids are turning in homework. I also need to be aware of those typical time parameters, like what usually happens at the start of class or what do we usually do at 9 o'clock, et cetera. And I have to read the room for objects. Oh, everyone is taking out their laboratory notebooks and they're turning it in. And I interpret that as role or job. Ah, their job is to be a homework manager. And your ability to read the room literally occurs in the blink of an eye. It's been measured to happen in a nanosecond, so that the minute you walk into a room, you can get that gestalt and go, oh, okay, great. Everyone's turning in their homework. I better take out mine out of my bag and turn that in. Individuals where they're not naturally and or quickly and efficiently reading the room, those are the kids that walk into a room and they tend to notice the fluff on the floor. They notice someone else's t-shirt. They think that's a cool water bottle. And then they see some chemicals that are out on the lab table and they think those are really cool and wonder what they could do with those. And they sit down and they don't take out their homework. And this is the student who gets home. And as the parent, you go, honey, don't you remember this morning we unzipped your backpack? Together, we put your lab report in the backpack. We talked about you turning it in. I just went onto Google Classroom and it's showing up as a missing assignment. Why didn't you turn it in? And this student will genuinely look at you baffled and go, well, the teacher didn't ask for it. Well, that's true. But the teacher doesn't always have to ask for it. You need to be able to read the room. Another really great example of this, maybe you're cooking dinner and you have the table half set, all right, and there's maybe a few placemats out and tables, and it's clearly water's boiling away on the stove. And this is the child who walks in with the bucket of craft materials and places it on the kitchen and says, hey, mom, can you help me make a diorama? And you think, well, yes, but not now. Like, read the room. This is not the right timing. And so one of the things is that situational awareness is one of the core underpinnings of executive function, because it's what guides your planning. It's what allows you to say, well, gee, if this is what's happening now, then that accesses that forethought, then this is what I need to look like, or this is what I need to do. So it's one of the bases of self-regulation. So there's a lot of things that you can be doing to actually naturally build situational awareness, but it's a huge underpinning that we have to make sure that kids really do focus on. And so I'm happy to share a few of those strategies, but I wanted to just give you a chance, Jill, to jump in. That's kind of what situational awareness is.
Well, and you know, because these are things that we as adults, we do it all the time. If we're managing in our lives and our work and our kids, we're doing this. And as you said, we're doing it in a blink of an eye. So it's kind of like we never really stop to think, oh, I might need to teach my child some of these skills. And so just you bringing it to our awareness, I think, is really helpful. And I would love for you to share how parents can help their kids get better at reading the room.
You bet. So there's kind of a number. So if we think about it as being space, time, objects, and people, let's start with space. So one of the number one ways is that when we walk into a reading room, we tend to read a room from the wide angle to the narrow angle. So we naturally think of a room as having kind of zones, even though they're not really mapped out that way. Everything does tend to be organized in zones. Even in just kind of a holistic broad way, if you think about a Target store, every time you go into a Target, whether you're going to a Target in Arizona or a Target in Massachusetts, they're all sort of organized the same way. There's the beauty product zone, the pet zone, then there's the food zone, et cetera. We tend to have the same thing. So in your kitchen, for example, there might be the pantry zone, there's the food prep zone, maybe there's the eating zone, et cetera. Oftentimes what happens is when kids struggle to read a room, they're not really looking at it in those kinds of zones. The reason why that's a problem is that it means you're not efficiently planning. So if you think about a classroom, if I understand a classroom is organized, there's the homework zone, there's the math zone, there's the teaching zone, and there's the help zone. If my teacher gives me the direction, okay, you're going to need your materials and your math manipulatives, then my brain naturally will say, oh, well, I'm going to need to go to the homework zone to get my materials, and I'm going to go to the math zone to get my manipulatives, and then I'll come back to my desk. Helps me visualize how I'm moving from point A to point B. So two easy tricks with space. Number one, I would say really talk about the zones that are naturally present in your house. So if you walk into the child's room, you can say, oh, there's your dressing zone, and just focus on the area in front of, say, the closet or the bureau where the child dresses. There's your sleeping zone, focus on the area by the bed. There's your homework desk zone. And this is one that I think is an important one for a lot of middle and high school students. Refer to something called sort of their drop zone. As adults, we all have a drop zone, and it's usually the corner of the kitchen counter where when you come in and you have the mail and the keys and things, you tend to drop it in a drop zone. Now, the reason you do that is because you're transitioning, but also because if you want to get back to something and you know, where did I put my phone? You're naturally going to look at that first place in the drop zone. So teach your child to not drop their phone, drop their keys all over the house. Have a dedicated drop zone. That's going to help with reading the room as well. So if you're looking in the pantry and your child needs to be making a decision about what to eat, naturally just talk about it. Oh, there's the canned food zone, there's the cereal zone, there's the snack zone, there's the paper products. Really just be naturally labeling it. That's going to teach your child how to kind of look at the room and then narrow in and focus on specific areas. So that's one of the number one ways that we really teach kids to pay attention to space. Label those zones. It makes all the difference in the world. And then my next favorite one is, how do we help kids be aware of time? And I'm going to jump in here and show you some of my favorite things. Now, I always have my tools around. So the thing about time is generally invisible. So if you say to your child, okay, it's 3:30 and we need to leave the house at 3:45. Again, there's two problems with that. Number one is most kids hear that as it's 3:30 and we need to leave at 3:45. They hear the words, they don't visualize the volume of time. But I've been sort of emphasizing executive function is all about visual forethought. We need to be able to see what something's going to look like. So if we're going to teach time, there are two ways in which we teach kids to be situationally aware of time, knowing what time is it now. And then secondly, how do we teach kids to be aware of the transition? By what time do I need to leave, or what do I need to do differently to manage my time? So to do that, we recommend two specific things. We recommend that you have two clocks in your living areas. And here's what I mean by that. Most people have a clock on the wall, except the problem is it's typically digital. So if you're in the kitchen, we look at the microwave or the oven, it's digital. If you're in the living room, you tend to look at the cable box, it's digital. If you're in your bedroom, you look at your alarm clock, it's digital. The problem with digital time is that it will give you the hour of the day, but it does not show you the volume of time. So trick number one, we love to have analog clocks in the house, and we call them wall clocks. Now, we call them wall clocks not because they're hanging on the wall, but because we're going to differentiate it from a second type of clock. So I encourage you, get an analog clock in a location in your house that can be easily referenced by multiple rooms. So if you have one that's kind of in that open space in the living room that can also be seen by the kitchen, that's a great place to have it. And make sure it's not Roman numeral. Sometimes we naturally have decorative clocks, but our kids can't read Roman numeral. Have an analog clock in the dining room, in the kitchen. If you can get one, like a little, you know, analog kind of alarm clock in their bedroom, let's get that in there too. And all you want to do is start to say, the wall clock says it's 1:15. Oh, our wall clock says that it's 2:20. And get kids used to referencing it. Did you know, I just find this fascinating, one of my kind of informal evaluation questions when kids come in to my office and I'm evaluating them, and I'll say, if you were standing in the kitchen and you didn't know what time it was and you didn't have your phone, where would you look? It's amazing to me how many kids don't naturally see the microwave, the oven. They'd be like, I'd ask my mom. They don't naturally walk into a room and are just constantly checking what time it is. Whereas I think you and I are always keyed into, we're glancing, oh, it's 12:15. Okay, now it's 12:25. Oh, it's 12:35. We're keying into it. Start to really get your kids to just keying into, where are those time tools? Now, the second one, this is really cool, is we recommend you have a second analog clock. For those of you that are listening and not viewing me online, I'm holding up just a classic, you know, analog clock. We call these the working clock. Now, it can be the same clock that hangs on a wall, but I don't recommend you hang this analog clock on the wall. You want to have it on the kitchen table where kids do homework, and we call it the working clock because it helps us gauge our work. You want to have it in the child's bedroom. You want to have it in the bathroom if that's where the child goes. And if a child goes in the bathroom and disappears for 40 minutes, or if the child goes into the bathroom and spends hours getting ready or takes too long of a shower and needs to take a quick shower, that's where that working clock is going to go. But we're going to do something different with the working clock. My working clock has a glass face, which I encourage you to use, and you can use a dry erase marker. Now, the value of doing that is that you can take the invisibility of time and you can make it explicit and visible. So the first thing you're going to do is you're just going to shade on the clock. So my clock says right now 10:25. I'll make it just a little bit clearer. And I'm going to put my marker, my dry erase marker, in the center of the clock, and I'm going to draw right on top of the clock face down the minute hand to 10:25. And I can say to my student, we have 20 minutes until we need to leave for soccer. So we're going to leave in 5, 10, 15, 20 minutes. And what I'm doing is I'm shading in that 20-minute pie and volume of time directly on the clock. Because now I've taken that invisibility of time and I've made it completely visible. The other thing that you can do is not only can you make time visible, but the other thing that you can do is you can plan time. So now what I'm doing is I'm taking a different colored dry erase marker and I'm writing on the clock what the student might do. So here's where I can say, okay, you're going to get dressed for soccer, and then for the first 10 minutes, they're going to get dressed. And in the second 10 minutes, I'm just writing the words pack bag. So that way the student can see, oh, okay, I really have 10 minutes to get dressed. And then I have 5 minutes to pack my bag. And it is a working clock in the sense that it has a battery and it's working, which means the minute hand is going to be moving underneath that shaded area of time. And that is so fantastic because it develops metacognition for time. Now the student is able to look and see, oh my gosh, this is how much time I have left. Similarly, it allows them to look back and say, wow, how much time did I use up? And what was I doing? Was I actually getting dressed, or was I petting the dog, or was I playing with Legos? So it allows them to see how they're using their time, because I can't tell you how many kids, they're lost. They don't even have a sense of the passage of time, because so many students guess time based on emotion, based on the actual passage of time. And if you're sitting on your phone doing Instagram or Snapchat, whatever it is, boy, you can lose 20 minutes without any awareness that 20 minutes is gone. So shade on a clock to increase that situational awareness of what time is it now and by what time do I need to leave. Other things that you can do, you can take a post-it note and you can put post-it notes on a clock to indicate what tasks a child needs to do. And with that, one of my favorite things is to create a check-in. So if your student is doing homework and we want to make them situationally aware, I can actually put a post-it note. And if you're not watching the video live, I'm putting a post-it note on the clock. I can write that I'm going to start my math homework. I can put a post-it note at the end of, say, the 20-minute volume of time. And on that, I can write what my goal is. So I can go ahead and show here that my end goal is to have answered 10 math questions. And then what we love to do is also to sort of put that post-it note at that midpoint check-in. So that at my midpoint, I want to have between 3 and 5 problems done. So that as time passes, if I get to a midpoint and I'm not at my midpoint goal, I can check in and say, well, why am I not? Or what's going on? Am I distracted? Do I need help? How long should I stay stuck before I ask for help? So drawing on a clock is one of the number one ways to create the invisibility of time and make it visible. I'll pause there for a moment, but I definitely want to give you a few other strategies for situational awareness too.
Well, these are just brilliant things. And I'm so excited about everything you're saying. And I'm thinking, and of course, it all resonates with me because we work with students with these kinds of skills all the time. If you're a parent listening and you've always thought about, you know, time being taught in math class, in school, on math worksheets, and, you know, all of these amazing suggestions that Sarah is giving us. First of all, you can listen to this over and over, and I would encourage you to do that because it's going to allow you to just start to think a little bit different and give you ways just in your daily life to stimulate them to picture it, to think about their plan, to look at clocks. But also, I would say to you, look, just think about, you know, if there are a number of things that you wish your child would be able to manage better, prioritize them, take your top one, and then pull out a tool that you're getting today and start applying that. So, you know, these are life skills are going to go on forever and ever. So start with one, really start to think it, apply it just in your daily life. And it will have, you know, over time, you're going to have a real impact on memory and attention and executive function and independence. So, you know, I don't want people to feel overwhelmed. I'm just like a puppy wagging my tail here. I'm so excited about everything, but you know, it's okay to start with one thing.
Absolutely. And you can start with one little thing of just even shading on the clock and no big deal because, I know someone asked, they said, well, gosh, what do you do if a child can't even read an analog clock? And part of the thing, too, is that it's not even just reading an analog clock, but think about the language of time, the number of times that we say, honey, we're leaving at a quarter of, or your friend's going to be here at 20 after, or you have until 10:02 to play your game, and then you need to get dressed. We're picturing what 10:02 looks like. We're picturing what 20 of, and some of our kids, that doesn't mean anything to them. So when you just take the time to shade on a clock, even if your child can't read the analog clock, they can't read time, they can certainly see that volume and that pie of time. They can see, oh, okay, that's a good half hour to do that, or that's a good 20 minutes to do that. But one other thing that I would mention is that there is a fantastic little curriculum called by a company called Ainslie Labs. It's spelled Ainslee Labs. And it is the only little curriculum that I've ever seen that has taught kids how to read an analog clock very quickly. So, you know, the thing that's really, really great about it is that I have kids who, I mean, I'm talking even college. I have high school, middle school students who've never been able to read an analog clock. And using this little curriculum by Ainsley Labs, which teachers can, or parents, teachers and parents can buy it. I mean, I think it's like $11. It's not expensive. I can get kids reading an analog clock in about 15 minutes flat. It's just a very unique, brilliant way of teaching time. So I definitely encourage you to check that out. So that's one big thing about time. Now, I love too, Jill, that you were like, oh my gosh, what do you do if you're a parent and you're thinking, okay, I don't know if I have time to take a photograph. I'm not sure. What if I'm somewhere and I can't just whip out a clock? What, or I can't just whip out a picture? What do I do? Well, I have a little magic trick, and my magic trick is also related to that last part of situational awareness, space, time, objects, and people. I want to give you a magic trick, and how do you help your child tune into their role in a specific space? So this magic trick is something that we call job talk, and boy, does it make a big difference. So one of the things that we do as parents and as educators is we're always giving our kids action directives. Let me give you an example of an action directive. Pack your bag, clean up the floor, empty the dishwasher, make your bed, brush your teeth. Now, when you say all of those things and you say, make your bed, brush your teeth, the fact of the matter is you're the one picturing the child brushing the teeth. You're the one picturing the child making their bed. So the magic trick is you want to change the action, make a bed, pack a bag, which is a verb, and turn it into a noun. Now, there's a very easy way to do that. We call it the strategy or job talk. So you want to put on the end of everything. So instead of saying brush your teeth, we say time for bed. You need to be a toothbrusher. Instead of saying make your bed, you need to be a bed maker. Instead of saying clean up the rug, you need to be a rug cleaner. Instead of pack your bag, you need to be a bag packer. Now, the reason why that works is the minute I say you need to be a bag packer, I've given you a noun and it makes it easier to visualize. Oh, well, what does a bag packer look like? What does a bag packer do? Where do I need to go? What objects will I need? It naturally encourages students to visualize that task. So it's such an easy trick and it has a huge, huge impact. Try it tonight. If you're home, say to your child after bed or after dinner, okay, we're all done with dinner. I need you to go be a toothbrusher. Could you mind helping me out? Would you mind being a table clearer? Just put ER. Okay, but the only little thing is, don't overuse this magic trick because your kids will be on to you. You have to sort of spread it out a little bit. But I promise you, when you spread it out, it really works. And by the way, there is a phenomenal resource called Make Social Learning Stick. The author is Elizabeth Sauter. And her book is all about social executive regulation skills. And there's some fantastic tips in there all about job talk as well. So definitely check out that resource for kids and for families. It's terrific.
Well, that is fantastic. That is a trick that people can try today.
Yep.
A good
it
place
works on
start.
Husbands too.
Yeah.
Just saying.
I will plug that away. This is LD Expert Live. I'm Jill Stoll, your host, founder of Stoll Learning Centers, and we're talking with Sarah Ward, expert in executive function. Sarah, this has just been brilliant. What last thought do you want to leave us with today?
Well, thank you again for the invitation. It's been so much fun to be here. My only last thought is, just remember, executive function is really forethought-based. And so the more you can help your children to visualize what it's going to look like and to kind of start with the end in mind and plan backwards, you're going to see a lot of success with executive function. So that would be my big takeaway message.
Perfect. Well, this has been really fun. This episode has been just packed. And so be sure and take advantage, everyone, and re-listen. So that you can grab all this information. STOA Learning Centers are open for both remote and on-site sessions and evaluations. Summer is a great time to give students a boost and to get started addressing learning challenges at their root so that students can reach their potential and thrive in school. Thank you again, Sarah, for the incredible practical information. I truly would love to have kept you here all day.